So we were looking for different places where matzah is mentioned, and we're going to narrow them down to my opinion of what the most important four are. But
And then we throw out the rest.
and then we'll see how the rest are tied into it.
Okay.
God
No,
willing.
then we're going to come up with a bit of a commentary on why what four are the four.
Exactly. Okay, what's the first one?
Halachmani.
So halachmani is obviously the first one. Halachmani can be looked at as an explanation of yachatz. In other words, yachatz is one of the things we do with the matzot.
Oh, I see.
And then halachmani is the explanation that's tied to that doing. I want to just go over the actual physicality of this so people have a clear picture right after Magid. It's actually the beginning of the Magid session. Halach Ma'anya. It's in Aramaic. It's interesting that it's specifically in Aramaic. When we break it in part, the big half becomes the Afikomen and the little half becomes the Lach Ma'anya, or the Lechem Oni in Hebrew. Oni is a root which relates to poverty, humility, humiliation, affliction.
Shame.
Not shame exactly. Deprivation, and also in a folk etymological way, the same letters as the word for answer, to answer,
so
to respond.
Is it not related to the Zoharic idea of dread of shame?
No, it's not. No, that's a different term.
Huh. It's nice that it's related to answer, because this is when we get answered, when we're impoverished, when we're afflicted.
Uh-huh.
In principle, that certainly happens in the story. We cry out because we're afflicted, depressed, and impoverished, and that's when God answers us.
Right. There's a lot of important stuff to say about that concept. I'll just mention one thing. In Kabbalah, this is the concept of Idaruta Dilatata. It means awakening from below, right? Or Hit Orarut Milamata in regular Hebrew. So there's an idea in Kabbalah that you have to have some kind of awakening from below of need before the divine blessing comes from above. It's like priming the pump. And so God wants to answer them, but they have to call out. And until they call out, God somehow can't answer them. There's no logical reason why that's how God should work, or at least no philosophically logical reason.
I've heard the explanation that if you're, you know, throwing a ball, you know, you'll say throwing a ball here, and it won't go so high, but if you start really low, and really just, you know, that kind of motion, that you're starting really low, and you throw it up high, it'll go much higher.
Sports analogies
yeah.
in Kabbalah.
Yeah.
There is no
So another important Hasidic teaching about this is that lechem oni means the bread of answers, because you discuss questions and answers while you're looking at it and holding it. But I think that what you said, Stephen, is definitely found in other rebbes. So what does this bread mean according to this explanation?
So affliction while we were in Egypt.
But slave bread for sure, right? It's bread you eat before you have any liberation. It's before that the awakening from below. Right. What else?
And it's related also to tzedakah, to whoever is needy, let them come and celebrate.
Which always struck me as odd. If this is bread which makes you feel oppressed,
yeah.
and then you say, come on, have some. I mean, isn't that a bit odd?
No, but it's identifying us with them, with the oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
We're eating the same bread together.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, we're not inviting them just for the bread and then to cry. We're going to have a meal.
Yeah, but it doesn't say that. You're right, actually. No, you are right. Come and join the Pesach, which is the whole meal, the whole celebration.
I think it's noteworthy that the main mitzvah of Pesach is the remembering of going out of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
But this statement, this paragraph, is saying we're not free. So it's like taking the idea that the Seder is the reenactment of it very, very seriously. It's like regard yourself as not free at this point.
Right.
Exactly.
So hashta avte, now
slaves.
Yes.
Right. I mean, the next part would make more sense because, you know, at the time this was written, the exile was already happening and Jews were longing to go back to Egypt. But to actually say that we're not free yet is like we're going back in time to before we were liberated from Egypt, actually.
That's right on. So it is very important to notice the temporal transitions that go in the Haggadah and the fact that this is in the present tense. And I think the fact that it's in Aramaic is reflective of its present tenseness, because the Haggadah was written at a time when that was the language that was spoken. It's one of our oldest rabbinic texts. That whole paragraph, Halach Ma'anya, that one paragraph, yeah.
There's a film called Devil's Arithmetic where this girl, it's during Passover Seder, I guess. Yeah, and she, some of her relatives are Holocaust survivors, and she hates this whole thing. You know, she really hates going to this. She's got tattoos. And she goes to answer the door for Elijah, and all of a sudden she finds herself in a concentration camp. It's right. about that real experience, really feeling like, oh, wow, I've just been transported. And I've never really thought about it.
Right. And I want you to notice, these words are said even if you're doing the Seder in Israel. You still say now, here, next year in Jerusalem, or next year in the land of Israel. So here is something different than that other place that we're going to get to. So the name of the place actually isn't the important part on that level. Obviously for the rabbis, the idea of Eretz Yisrael and coming out of exile had also a completely political dimension. It wasn't just a spiritual idea.
I think it's interesting how the first thing that we do, I mean, after Kiddush, first thing we do after Kiddush is that we break something. We break this matzah. Yeah. This Haggadah calls it the bread of brokenness. Mm. Which is, you know, just the notion that we're starting out identifying with brokenness.
Yes. And as we were talking just at the beginning, the smaller half is the lachma anya. It's the broken half that's incomplete, that's missing the majority of what it needs. Its fuller consciousness is missing. Right? So at that point, of course, you take the afikoman away. And so what you have is you have one whole matzah, one piece of a broken matzah, and then another whole matzah. And then for the rest of the storytelling, there are times when you uncover the matzah, and that's the time when you're telling the story. And there are times when you cover the matzah and pick up the cup, and that's the times when you're celebrating or praising.
It's like
so that's the dance there, which is otherwise looks rather weird and mysterious. You uncover the matzah to tell the story. You cover it back up and lift up your cup to praise God. There are a number of points in the Seder where you kind of take a break from telling the story.
Yeah. It's kind of like what happens with the yod. You uncover the separate Torah, you read from it, you're telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then you cover it up again. Mm. Of course, there are blessings for and out, so it's not quite the same.
No, but it's nice. Yeah. Now, this, by the way, when we get here, everyone likes to sing, as we begin the storytelling, we do Manish Tana, the four questions, and then Avadim Hayinu. And everyone wants to sing at that point, Avadim Hayinu, Hayinu, Atav Neforin, which means, we were slaves, now we're free. But we haven't finished the Seder, so we're not free. It's so hard, you can't stop people from singing it. It's just too hard. But the reality is, it doesn't say Atah B'nei Chorin here for a reason, because we're not there yet. Now, we're going past that to find where is the next place that we mention in matzah.
So why do we have the afikoman?
Why do we have the afikoman? That shall be revealed.
Tonight?
Tonight.
One of the night is different.
Right. Okay, where's our next explanation of matzah?
So the next we found was the explanation of Maror and
Maror.
Yeah, so let's open to it. That's one of those landmarks in the Haggadah, right? Rabban Gamliel used to say. So you notice that we go through most of the storytelling before we get the second explanation of matzah, which means most of the time that we're telling the story, we're looking at it as bread of slavery, and we're looking at ourselves as slaves. So what is the second explanation of matzah? Would someone read that paragraph?
There's one, matzah, why do we eat this unleavened bread? Because the dough of our fathers did not have time to become leavened before the King of Kings, the Holy One, blessed is He, revealed Himself to them and redeemed them, as it is written. They baked the dough which they had brought out of Egypt into unleavened bread, for it had not fermented because they were driven out of Egypt and could not delay, nor had they prepared any provisions for the way.
So, simplest meaning, what does this matzah mean?
We're leaving in a hurry.
And on the simplest level, we were in Egypt, now we're leaving.
Beginning of chapter,
right? The second explanation is that we eat matzah because it represents leaving Egypt. The first explanation is we eat matzah because it represents being in Egypt. But now, all of a sudden, it means leaving Egypt.
About this, it's always puzzled me. It says we were in a hurry, but it also says in the story that we were told, get ready for the third day.
You mean if they had a few days to get ready? Well, they had all the plagues to get ready, right?
Well, they had specifically 3 days to get ready
Why haven't they prepared provisions?
Good question. I mean, the verse answers the question in a way that the actual explanation of the verse does not here, right? They were because they were driven out. Like, maybe they thought, okay, that day, but that minute, midnight, in the middle of the night, maybe they thought, okay, we'll hang out, get up in the morning, we'll go.
Also, it's important to know that they did not have baker's yeast back then, so they actually did let it ferment for several days.
It's like a sourdough starter.
Like a sourdough, right.
Of them sending them out with the animals and the gold and the presents and so on and so forth from the Torah.
Being driven out?
Yeah.
That whole moment in the story is an interesting moment, because they're driving them out and saying, go, take whatever you want. Just take anything, just please go. Something like that.
Uh-huh. But it's also the urgency of this time. When you eat it, be ready to have your belt tight and have a staff in your hand. Be ready to get out of there. When they say go, you go. It's mm-hmm. do it now, mm-hmm. not next year. And the first time you mentioned it, it is do it next year. Mm-hmm. So the time sense is shifted.
Mm-hmm. Notice also this is in the past tense instead of the present tense. Matsuzo, why? Because we don't have time to bake it. We got to run. It doesn't say that. It's because our ancestors did this.
Dafka. Yeah, because our fathers did this. I'm sure they were the ones baking.
Yes. I'm not sure if you said that loud enough to get on the tape.
It's all right. Wherever the tape is played, someone else will
say. Isn't Avotino, does it also mean ancestors? It's like when you translate it into fathers, it's like a selective.
Yeah.
Arguably, anytime you have a mixed group, you use the male pronouns and nouns. And anytime you have a just men, you use male pronouns and nouns. And anytime you have just women, you use feminine pronouns, nouns and nouns. Arguably, yes, but you know, but why should the male subsume the female in that case?
Well, but it always does.
It should, yeah.
It always does.
Yeah.
There's nothing
different about language, like the fact that they translated as fathers seems strange, especially when we're talking about the
No, for sure. That's what Tony was saying. And for sure, when we write Haggadot, we don't translate the same way that some of these are translated. Yeah. But in this one, it says our father's dough.
Yeah,
which
right.
is very.
I know.
Our father's dough.
They were really
progressive.
Fathers were making bread.
Right. That's why they got liberated. They deserved it. Because they already
that's
liberated themselves.
That's why it hasn't risen yet.
Okay, Gufa. I want you to notice something about this explanation, which is not related to the overall picture of what we're doing, but is very interesting and weird, which is that the verse says something very different than the explanation of the verse here. Because the verse says they didn't have time because the Egyptians drove them out. There's nothing friendly, there's nothing warm, there's nothing inspiring in any obvious way about that. But the interpretation of the verse is that it means that the Holy One, blessed be, redeemed them, miyad, immediately. And so the verse talks about the Egyptians driving them out, but the explanation of the verse says that the verse is a proof text not for the Egyptians driving them out, but for God revealing God's self.
Why would they have to necessarily be different things?
Hmm? They don't necessarily have to be different, but they're not obviously the same thing, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And to state that, to make the claim that they're the same thing, is making an important claim about metaphysical spiritual reality in some ways. Yeah. You know, like, how is it that in that moment of being rushed, forced, fleeing,
that's redemption.
That you experience God's revelation? Most of the time when we're in that state, we don't have even time to think about, is God being revealed in this moment, right?
Because they're in survival
mode. In survival mode. And yet somehow the rabbis wanted to say in interpreting the text that actually it was a different kind of moment.
But maybe it was survival mode then, and looking back on it, we see it as redemption. Is that possible?
Well, maybe survival mode is redemption.
I don't think it fits the words here. Ad shenigla aleha melech machem lechem. Until, right? Right? Al shuma, he speak b'tzekam shel avotinu l'achmitz. Right? It didn't finish leavening to become fermenting to become leavened in the dough until or at which point nigla it was revealed upon them the King of Kings the Holy One blessed be.
So revelation and redemption both in the same.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
This idea of garshu being driven out may come up later. So I want you to remember it. So, what's the next explanation for matzah?
Before we do, one more question about this one.
Mm-hmm.
It says, because they were driven out, they didn't have to go to that. But in the first one, this is the bread of affliction, which our ancestors ate in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
How is this night different from all other nights? I mean, in the first Pesach, they eat matzah all the time. That's what they have. It's the bread of affliction. Do they ever eat bread?
I mean, if leavened bread is simply the sourdough kind of bread that Brian's talking about, of course, they could. But so actually, we might say, what about that broken matzah represents poverty bread, and then what about it represents running away bread? Right? So poverty bread may mean the fact that it's less than half.
Less than half.
Right?
Okay.
That's an easy way to get out of the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
But maybe there's a deeper explanation. Mm-hmm. I mean, my own understanding is that we're taking the symbol and we're transforming it from one moment, from one part of the Seder into the other. Mm-hmm. So the third time that we mention matzah.
One thing also from interesting from a traditional culture, nutritional point of view.
Yes.
Is that it would have been considered a really, really bad to eat unfermented bread.
Right. Yeah.
Because fermenting grains, like all grains were fermented, and all grains were soaked, not just bread, but any kind of grain that you'd roast, like the roasted kernels that they brought to the temple, those were soaked and fermented, some made into chametz somewhat before they were eaten, because that's how they're digested. So we're out of touch with that now, because we buy all their stuff. But all traditional cultures ferment, they ferment their grains to some degree.
Or sprout them?
Mm-hmm. They do it in different ways in different parts of the world. Some of them put it in sacks and put it in the stream and let the water go through it for a few days before taking it out and cooking it. Gets rid of various toxic stuff. So the idea of not letting it ferment at all probably had a different connotation that we're out of touch with. It really means it's not good stuff.